Hello, I'm Chris Lisher, and welcome to Turning of the Wheel, an intelligent, lively discussion on astrology, art, and adventure. Timing is everything, and as the great wheel turns, we are best prepared when we are best informed. Join me as I explore the current planetary alignments and offer insights for coping with change. Educational, informative, enlightening, the Turning of the Wheel is a welcome pause in your daily swirl of constant change. Through intelligent discourse, inspired guests, and educational segments, I will help to enlighten your knowledge of astrology and guide you to accept change as the great wheel of life turns. Call in with your questions and speak with some of the greatest visionaries in the time-tested practice of astrology. Turning of the Wheel, Astrology, Art, and Adventure with Chris Lisher, each week on Turning of the Wheel podcast. Hello and welcome to Turning of the Wheel. My name is Chris Lisher. As you know, this is a show about astrology. Astrology is a fascinating subject, always has been and always will be, in my view. I've been fascinated with it for years. I oftentimes stray into other subjects, but astrology is my main focus for my podcast. You know, that's why the name is called Turning of the Wheel, because as that great wheel turns, we can see life changing and we have to learn to adapt to it. We can be forewarned by that as well. Before we get my guest on, I want to remind you about my newsletter, which goes out every Sunday afternoon. In there, you'll find a couple of paragraphs about the mundane aspects that affect all of us on the planet. This is sort of the larger picture of where things are happening in the world today, or that week, rather, to come. And then I break it out into individual signs. I encourage you to read your sun sign and your rising sign each week. If you don't know your rising sign, contact me and I'll get it for you. All that is based on your time of birth. So we need the birth date, the birthplace, and the birth time in order to get the precision. And once you get the precision of the astrology, it really is amazing. And then you read your rising sign and your sun sign each week. You put the two together in sort of a cosmic sandwich, I guess, and you'll get your forecast. And it's always right. And people just are amazed by how accurate astrology is. It's not me necessarily, but it's the fact that astrology is so valuable and so prescient and so quick to and amazingly accurate. Without further ado, years ago, when I first started my podcast, and I'm talking about probably about 11 years ago, I was out looking around the internet trying to find people to talk to, and I stumbled upon Marguerite Manning, who's going to be my guest coming on in a few seconds. And we've been on the show. We've done probably three or four podcasts over the course of the years, but it's always great to have her on. She has a new workshop coming out and a new workbook coming out about the 12th house. So we're going to discuss the 12th house and with her, and we're going to figure out, because the houses can be kind of hard to understand, but the houses are where you are. Those are all determined by the rising sign, which is why it's so important to get the rising sign, which brings me back to my point about the time of birth. So I'll stop babbling. Let's get Marguerite on. Marguerite Manning, marguerite.com. This is her website, and she's here today. So welcome to the show, Marguerite. Great to have you back on.
Wonderful to be back, Chris. 2008 was our first show together. I think we talked about six of them. And at the time, you are the Iron Man of astrology radio, because at the time, you were one of the only astrology internet live shows on at the time.
I think that's right.
And the editor at Llewellyn that published my first book, we found when she heard from you, she said, oh, you want to get on this guy's show? He's really, really good. And she was very accurate.
Oh, that's great. Wow. I mean, I can't believe it's been that long. I mean, I think I went on. Actually, you were probably on in 2008, but I think I started in 2007, but it doesn't matter. Who cares? We're still here.
Right. It was the early part of 2008 because my book was just coming out. I thought you were, the way your show was at the time, it seemed very established. So
I was. I was on regular, conventional, to what they call terrestrial radio, which means it's, based like good old-fashioned radio. That was what I was on back then. And I stopped doing that because it was too expensive. And so I went to do podcasts. So that kind of brings us up to date.
In this day and age, people listen to, what's great about the podcast is they can listen to when they can listen to it. They don't have to be a slave to the radio or the television.
I know. That's on-demand listening is what we all want these days. And I listen to podcasts all the time. So I think it's a great vehicle for that. But listen, let's talk about your new workshop coming out. You're talking about discovering the 12th house and understanding your 12th house and how it relates to you as a person and your karmic sort of destiny. Give us the deep end of what's going on with the 12th house.
Deep end of the 12th house. I like that. I might use that in the future. Because no, it's really true. In fact, when I first met you, my very first book was based on my purpose and my passion is finding the soul's past in the birth chart. Like every astrologer, I can do transit astrologies and look forward. But I really felt that message, the things that you find for your clients and listeners about what energies they're coming into, that makes a whole lot more sense if we can see where they came from. Mm-hmm. And when I first moved to Virginia, we visited the Edgar Cayce Institute, the ARE in Virginia Beach. And I was so amazed at how he, back in the day, he was supposed to be channeling the spirit Ra that walked with Jesus back back in the day, and he was incredibly insightful. 1929, he was talking about Septius, this planet Septius, and astrology and how it affected us, and I was amazed. And then after Pluto was discovered, then he started referring to Septius as Pluto, because what he was seeing it as the seventh planet from the Earth. Uh-huh. So he was seeing so many things that we have. That's why I say you talk about the turning of the wheel. We have yet to glean all the knowledge that is in this cryptic little diagram of our trade, a map of the birth energies we were born under. So when he said in his readings, that, which I found fascinating, Chris, is that the soul, when it comes into each earthly lifetime, this physical realm, it's coming in to be physically successful. But in other words, an honorable human life, one that the body has physically worked for, but the soul can be proud of. Not one or the other, one where there's a combination of the both. And he said, when the soul enters this physical existence, it comes in through a portal. And are you ready for this? That lies 30 degrees above the eastern horizon as seen from the birthplace. And what's that? That's what we call... Is it any wonder? That's what we call the 12th house. Yeah. And I believe we were taught this ancient science by people. Our ancient astrologers got that. I don't know who taught them, but they knew that that's how this, where the soul came in. So by looking at that house, this, and I put six keys in my fundamental and rudimentary keys that I use as a launching off point to do my soul sessions and my karma counseling sessions. The six keys to start unlocking that 12th house, because it's all babble to us. It's not, and people say, oh, I have nothing in my 12th. That doesn't matter. You have a sign on the 12th. You have a ruler of that sign. The ruler of that sign is in some particular area of your birth chart, some other house. It's also in some other sign most of the times. And it's the closest hard aspect it's making is a telltale sign of what undid you in your last lifetime, what you're still is a wound that's very difficult for you to get over in this lifetime. So is it any wonder that this house is referred to by most ancient astrologers and modern day ones as the house of secrets, sorrows, and self-undoing? I think it can be an empowering house of enlightenment if we bring those unconscious secrets, sorrows, and self-undoing from yesterday into our conscious awareness now and say, ah, now I get it. I'm not crazy. The reason I'm afraid of this is because this happened to me yesterday. Or the reason I don't like this is because I'm just worried that the same thing is going to happen again. It's what I call the cosmic contrails of our last life. When our soul came in, this is the emotional debris field that lay in its wake. And if as astrologers, we go back and pick over it, we can see.
Mm-hmm. What? Well, you know, part of it is, I think that, you know, by knowing what we came from and knowing what we did in the past should be an empowering kind of knowledge for us, because it's going to allow us to say, okay, these are mistakes I made in the past. And logically, we would not be making those mistakes again, I would think.
Right.
Hopefully. That would be the desired effect, at least, is they learn your lesson and move on from there. And you'd hope that that would be what it would come down to. It's interesting that you raised that point about sort of what we left came into the world sort of as our damaged, not our damages, maybe it's too hard a word, but as our baggage.
I call it improper programming from the last life.
Right. I think that's true. There's something to that, you know. And the idea, when you mentioned earlier, you triggered a thought in my mind about how they learned this, or who taught whom this logic. I think some of that may have been come in pre-baked. In other words, people centuries ago may have inherently been born with this information in them, and they just devised a system for it. I believe that it's sort of baked into our DNA, much like you'd find when you buy a computer, and it comes preloaded.
Absolutely.
With information. I think that some of that information is there, and we have just been able to adapt it and make it work for ourselves. And we, as we rise ourselves in consciousness, we find ourselves better to adapt and to understand what this is all about. But the 12th house is always ominous in people. You know, when you talk about the 12th house, people see this and they say, oh my gosh, my son is in the 12th house. What am I going to do? Does this mean I'm destined to doom? Well, of course, we're all destined to doom. But what is the lesson that's there for that person in the 12th house?
And, you know, and that's another thing that Edgar Cayce said that I truly believe in. People say to me, and I'm sure they do with you too, they say, Marguerite, well, you know, with astrology, do you believe in fate or do you believe in free will? I say, I believe in both.
In both, of course, yeah.
Our birth energies are what we've chose for this lifetime. But like when you go to college, if you don't show up for class and do the heavy lifting, you're not going to get that degree.
Right.
So it is our destiny if we choose to do the heavy lifting and live up to it.
Right.
And if not, nobody's going to get angry with us. Nobody's going to punish us. But guess who's going to be back doing the third grade again?
Us. That's true, yeah.
So that's, and if you want to look at that as a punishment, it's just the natural cyclical nature of divine order in this universe.
Right. Well, that raises a good question. Do you think people do ignore their 12th house and do repeat the same mistakes?
I think it's one of these things, and this is what my purpose of the workbook, I think we have no choice but to ignore it if we're leaving it in our unconscious vault. When we go in there and explore that on a conscious level, I always say, the analogy I use is when I got my very first car and I went in and I got this Super Beetle Volkswagen, and it was turquoise blue, it was a convertible, and I thought, I am going to be the only one on the road, and everywhere I turned, there was a car just like that. They weren't making them like that. No, but all of a sudden, this was in my conscious awareness, so I was seeing it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think. I think when we delve into that on a conscious level, don't let our soul get sucked back into the reminiscent of the old habit patterns and, oh, I'm the victim and look what happened to me. But if we go in there in a very analytical way and say, okay, to the soul, I call it validating the soul. Yes, this did happen to you. But you know what? That was yesterday and yesterday's gone. Well, you chose to do this in this lifetime. You'd be surprised with how many of my clients, even my own children when I was raising, once I validated that fear or that improper programming in the past, and said, you know what, you came back to undo it, they felt empowered. And I really think it's about validating the soul. Isn't that what shrinks do?
Yes, they do. And they charge a lot more money than we do. And you're there for, like, you know, 3 years before you figure out. But the idea, though, you know, I would think it would be logical, and this is only my logical mind putting this out there, that people would naturally know inherently on some primal level that they've already been down a road. This is why we have the visions of deja vu. We know we've been there before. These may be traces of memories that we've lived in the past. Wouldn't it make sense that we would inherently, almost by instinct or by design, not go down that path again? And that may not come from, I mean, because not everybody is as well informed about their astrology chart as you or I may be. And if they're not well informed, how could they avoid, why wouldn't they just naturally avoid making those mistakes before? Because they instinctively knew that that was not the place to go.
Well, it's something that we've chosen. They instinctively know there's something wrong with it, which is why they stay away from it, when that's the last thing I believe they should do. They should be addressing it from a place of, it's not going to get the best of me this lifetime. For instance, in the spirit of full astrological disclosure, you and I end up having the same sign on our 12th house, which is Leo. And with Leo in the 12th house, and forget about where the sun is, it's in different places in our chart and different signs, but where Leo on the 12th says that we were supposed to be somebody in a previous lifetime, and some kind of humiliating fall from grace took us to the point where the spotlight, hence radio shows, being behind the scenes writing, being out there on center stage, left us feeling very embarrassed, ashamed, and deflated when it wasn't our fault.
A fall from grace.
Exactly. It was a fall from grace. And quite often with Leo, it had to do with the fact that you were being benevolent, generous, or romantic with someone else, and that you were taken advantage of. So in this lifetime, that is where we're trepidatious. It's like, you know what? I would rather, usually people that have Leo on the 12th, or, you know, are not the people that want to be out there out there center stage soaking up. They want the work to soak up the sunlight. They want the work to get
I've always understood it the same way. I always thought that Leo in the 12th, to me, I thought, I've done some past life regression and stuff like that, came down to sort of a position of power where you as well, sharing the same sign, were in a position of power. And that position of power is, as you describe, but it also had other components to it as well, such as may have been people who had power over others, perhaps maybe a supervisor or a boss of some large corporation, or perhaps a slave owner, or perhaps someone like that, who was in a position of power, or even nobility of some sort. But that nobility and power was one that they were hoisted to that area of power. And now we look to the opposite of that, which would be the Aquarius, where we turn ourselves into a state where now, instead of being the one who's the power beacon of you know, emanating all this power, we have to work behind the scenes to give this sort of collective goodness to the world unabashedly and without sort of the fanfare. Is that how you read it?
Well, not just that, because in the last lifetime, you know, they were probably programmed to believe you weren't responsible enough to meet the merits of spotlight and wow the masses on your own back then. Now it's almost like we have a lifetime with Aquarius now on the 6th of believing that it's got to be a humanitarian effort, or we're not comfortable putting ourselves out there. It's got to be for the betterment of mankind, or guess what? We don't want to reap the benefits on an egotistical level.
That makes sense.
The problem with that is we're supposed to come back to say, you know what? This is lost stardom, Chris. We're supposed to come back and say, we can do that, Aquarius. We can do that kind of humanitarian, highly principled, be outside the box thinking, which is what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Astrology couldn't be more outside the box in the age we grew up in, but you're supposed to you're not supposed to be afraid of becoming a star. You're supposed to realize that your stardom can be used for humanitarian purposes. In other words, we're supposed to combat that fear and confront it and not let that do us in again.
And I think that's very accurate. I mean, I had to say that, you know, when I got into radio, I was a little bit nervous about it. I mean, you know, there right. you are. I was being pushed into an uncomfortable place, but I felt compelled to do it anyway. So in all these years I've been doing it, I've never sought any money or reward for it. I just do it basically because I love the subject and I love talking to people such as yourself about it. And so having that sort of, I'm not trying to boast. This is just the way it is.
It's no,
and sort of being selfless in that regard is a sort of a classic representation of the opposite of what I was in a past life. So it is that truly Aquarian kind of quality of spreading this news out there without looking for stardom or anything else. I mean, and just letting it go. And by letting it go like that, you sort of are fulfilling a manifest destiny of what was the opposite of what I was perhaps in a past life. So that I've always thought that made a perfect sense to me and sort of brought me full circle.
And I think a lot of it, too, is what we were doing in that previous life, what we were being ridiculed for and ashamed of, was probably something very Aquarian, ahead of its time.
Perhaps, yeah. Perhaps.
And that's where we had our fall from grace. So that's why we have to do it this time, not being worried about a fall from grace and being willing to accept the successor stardom that comes with it and not feel that, okay, wait for that other shoe to drop when it does. Okay, don't want that to happen because, you know, that's when it's all going to hit the fan. No, that's not what's supposed to happen in this lifetime. So that's what this workbook is about, saying to somebody, you know what, you're not wrong. I'm validating that part of you. And guess what? We're the ruler of that 12th, yours it being in the 7th house of partnerships and one-on-one, really important romantic or partners, I should say.
Partners,
and my
yeah.
being in the 10th house of father and the outside world. The outside world and my father did me in that lifetime, or my authority figure. And in yours, it was the person you were partnered up with either professionally or romantically as in the marriage that undermined you in that lifetime, whether it was intentional, and that's why you have to go through the chart to find out. Then the who you were, the sign on that 12th house, you were... Your ruler is in the same sign. Your ruler is in Aries, as mine is in Gemini, is in our sun sign. So that was who you were in your last time. You were a warrior. You were somebody who was really going to be blazing the trail in that lifetime to some degree.
That's what I discovered in my past life regressions. I mean, I got myself back into, I don't know people who are familiar with that or not, but I went back at least 150 years. I was, you know, I one of the things I came up with was a sort of a rebel spy in the Civil War, you know, so that would be something who lived a very dangerous sort of life, or a slave owner, as I mentioned earlier.
Right.
But these things all seem familiar to me, and
You might have been doing something very different with technology. You might have been somebody that was using like invisible ink in that day.
Who knows? Or technology. Or a spy. Who knows? I could have been any number of things. Yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's what I mean. Something that was beyond the now knowledge back then. That's Aquarius on the 12th.
Right. And I think that the fact that I have been on the air and doing these for 11 years and I've had all the world's greatest astrologers on and they have never once hesitated to come on my show, I think that is the universe saying, yes, this is where you're supposed to go. Otherwise, I wouldn't be so well received and accepted by all these people.
Exactly. That's exactly the truth. Mm-hmm. And, you know... if you were to turn around and you look at the closest hard aspect, and I show what the hard aspects and how easy it is to find them in your birth chart, the closest hard aspect to your 12th house ruler, which is your sun, that would be your Chiron. And I have very tight orbs. That would be to your Chiron in
my fourth,
in
which
the,
means
in the fourth,
it's healing.
It means it's in other words, the wound that you received in your last life came on the home front. Mm-hmm. You're on the home front. And particularly the women in your life, they were not, either your mother was gone or your wife died or your mother died. That was very vacant and lack of nurturing on that home front for you in the last lifetime. So in some way, you're going to be faced to be the nurturer yourself on the home front, or to deal with that in a way that it doesn't undermine you anymore in the next life, undermine you anymore, it doesn't cripple you. That's the closest hard aspect to your rule. It crippled you in that last lifetime, not feeling, I mean, just loved. I'm feeling nurtured emotionally.
Right, of course, yeah. And you know, the irony of it all is that really did come to fruition for me, because I did lose my wife, but this was in my present life. And it equipped me with the ability to be the nurturer that I am. My moon is in Cancer. What could be better for a person who's faced with trying to raise three children by themselves? That was perfect. And in many cases, my son and my children's, so charts map up with mine exactly by precision. I mean, by partile, they are right on the money, which is it gives you goosebumps, which I think is a wonderful feeling, because that's kind of like your soul is taking shape and saying, yes, you're right about this. But those skills, I think, came to me through by the natural order of my birth chart, as if I had been burned in the past, and now my chance came to sort of rectify and redeem myself through that work.
I think that's accurate. Absolutely true, and mm-hmm. I think I didn't know that about mm-hmm. your wife, but I'm not when clients say that to me, or people, they say, you know, that's exactly what happened to me. So I said, well, that should prove, I know nothing about your life in this lifetime, but that should prove that this is something that your soul chose to come back and move beyond in this lifetime. And if it's buried there in the 12th and it's never being consciously there, how can we do that?
Right. Well, I think the truth is fair to be found. It's not to say that everyone's chart is going to be as dramatic or have the same kind of output as I had. But I do find it ironic. I mean, that's not the right word, but I find it fascinating that I came into this world this is the task I was given. Perhaps I didn't fulfill that task in the past, or I was left abandoned in the past. And so now that opportunity came to me to fulfill that. And you know, none of us would have made, the decisions we make along our road and our path when we're younger, we make them without perhaps thinking about this stuff. But then when it comes true and you start to look backwards and you see these things beginning to line up, you're like, wow, this is pretty incredible that this lined up this way. Who would have thought that I would have to fulfill this, step into these shoes,
right,
and raise these three kids by myself as a nurturer? Thank God I had a moon in Cancer. I mean,
well, that's because you became, and you know, with your moon in Cancer, and I find this true of a lot of men, especially when they come into this incarnation with their moon in Cancer. Like, you have the moon in Cancer in the father's house. Okay, so they're in this lifetime. They're supposed to be mother and father.
That's what I was, exactly. My youngest son, his moon is exact same degree as my son. So I literally was mother and father to him, and I still continue to be. And I think that's just remarkable. It gives me goosebumps. Now, you've got to be of a sort of person who can look at this intellectually and sort of divest yourself from the emotional quality of it.
That's the conscious addressing. That's the consciously addressing the 12th, not getting sucked back into the, oh my God, here we go again, as much as saying, I get it now.
Yeah, I totally get it. And I had what I call a Uranian moment, where I was talking to somebody right during the time my wife was sick, and boom, I had this flash of insight that said, wow, I'm supposed to do this. There's no question in my mind. This is my duty. And as a result, I was able to power through it in a way that I don't think could have been done otherwise. So, you know, knowing this information about myself, understanding my past and my present and perhaps my future, allowed me to embrace this rather than run and be, you know, a victim or a pity party or
absolutely,
whatever. You know, and I've always resisted that. I never wanted to be exploitive of my situation. I don't really like even talking about it, but I do because I think it's educational for people to understand. And I want to live as sort of an example of what this manifestation looks like.
And just to show you in the same vein, because I don't like most Leos on the 12th don't like talking about their personal things, because it's not, they don't want to make things about them. But when I was growing up in this lifetime, you know, with my Leo on my 12th and there in my the ruler there in my father's house, when I did my past life, or you know, did the 12th house for me long time ago, I realized that in my last lifetime, my father was at odds with the kind of work I was doing, which is kind of like teaching this kind of spirituality, mm-hmm. and being condemned for it. And I wanted to do things like become an actress and do, or this kind of teaching, and was condemned for it. And he was angry with me. And I took my little children and I left the house I was living with, he and my mother, in this last lifetime. And I was so angry with him. Now I come back into this lifetime, and then and I really believe it was the same man. But father I had was very loving. All he did, he would never discipline us. He told my mother, I don't want my kids hating me, which was very interesting looking back. But then what's interesting is my dad died of a massive coronary at 59. Never got to see my three children. And I lament that to this day.
Yeah, of course.
You know what I mean? Here, I took them away from him in my last life. Now, that's not about a punishment. It's just about, people have to understand, it's about what goes around comes around, like putting out energy that in order for your soul to evolve, you've got to see it on the other side, what it feels like.
Yeah, and I think that's, and sort of living that way is exactly. what presents you with that situation. I mean, it's remarkable. When you see the precision and accuracy of this, and like I said to you, you know, for me, astrology, we always deal with orbs in astrology, and we usually allow a 6-degree orb, at least that's what I allow, either way, in order for influence to be there. But
do you do that for the lights too, Chris, the lights as well?
Yeah, I do that mostly for that, yeah. Okay. But it's always the 6 degrees. I mean, there's a wide range. Some people say 8, some people say 10. I stick with stick. We all have our own.
Me too. That's why I said mine are pretty tight, even for the lights.
Exactly.
A lot of people give more room for the light. You
and
know?
Then, so then I, well, that's true. They do. But as a result of that, I find that the precision is there. And then you see when you get degree by degree, it's not just, you know, it's 12 degrees to 12 degrees. That is saying something loud and clear. You just can't refute that.
No, I agree. And that's what to me is fascinating. People will say to me, maybe they do to you, oh, you know, you're a Gemini or your husband's a Leo and you don't have any Geminis or Leo. But what's really interesting, one daughter of mine has Venus in Gemini. The other daughter has Venus in Leo and she's more like her dad. And the other one is more like me. So, you know, you have to look deeper into the layers in the chart. Venus represents your children. It represents your loves, you know, the close personal family members. So, you know, it's not like, oh, if they were really, why aren't your children the same sign as you if they inherit or they're supposed to be with you? There's other markers in the birth chart to show you what you're talking about, to show you the degree and the connection of souls in the chart.
Yeah. I think that, you know, I mean, it's again, I come back to that precision piece. I think that's right. Really what it comes down to. And I think that you want to be, you know, we can interpret astrology in a wide array of ways. We've got to be careful not to dig too deep. I think that when you get into situations where the things just map up perfectly, it's irrefutable. You can't deny it.
Right, exactly. And there are certain things that you just can't deny. Like when I see a Neptune, no matter what sign it's in, when I see a Neptune in the 12th house, this is somebody who was, and inevitably, karmically speaking, was in some way so persecuted or so emotionally wounded in their past life, they went so deep to get away from that. They are very psychic in this life. They have a channel to the collective consciousness that none of us, whether they're aware of it or not, that none of us can match.
Yeah.
And that's why most psychics usually have that Neptune in the 12th.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, very common. Yeah, it's there, very common, because they understand there's something about it that they just totally get. And it does have a very strong karmic link to it. That's what I love about
right.
it. Yeah.
Right.
It's really fascinating. You know, the quality of the 12th house. Now, I think people look at the 12th house and say, you know, like my youngest son, for example, has his Pluto is in the 12th house, right on the ascendant.
And what sign is on his 12th?
It's 12, a Scorpio. And so you have to say to yourself, wow, it almost looks, and it does look this way. I mean, this is the thing. You have to say, this child was supposed to have lost something valuable in his life. And that's what happened to him. And so it's a very, when you see these kinds of, like I said, that this is the stuff that gives me goosebumps because it's so precise and so right on the money. It's just incredibly enriching. And that's not to say that we all have this drama in our lives. That may not be the case.
But you know what? We all have a past. And
we
if
do.
It's improperly programmed, it feels like a soap opera to us.
It does,
until we pull it out. So when he has Scorpio on the 12th, his is a backstory of, believe it or not, lost control. That his past life, he was a past life of someone fiercely courageous and geniusly resourceful. And he was destined in that lifetime with Scorpio on the 12th to conquer, in some way, to conquer the terrifying unknown. But he ended up being alone and unlikely survivor whose life held the promise of his life at that time held the promise of some kind of, could have been in the military, unconditional protection, mm-hmm. empowering resources like an inheritance or a legacy, until some type of drastic separation or a life-changing catastrophe, it could have been war, it could have been the death of a parent, left him so psychologically alone and shamefully dependent on the charity of others, he may have ended up in an orphanage. His soul was forced to bury his emotional resolve by kind of suppressing all the secret fears and intense desires that fueled his emotional resolve.
Right.
So he was improperly programmed to believe he couldn't trust anyone to protect him from imminent danger or treacherous forces.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's where therapy and, you know, good work and a sort of self-exploration can really peel back the layers of that sort of emotional onion, for lack of a better term.
And so I would say to somebody like that, you know, you get defensive right away because you feel nobody will for you.
Mm.
You're so used to feeling like you're waiting for the steps to come running behind you, the military, the planes. Nobody's there for you. Mm-hmm. So when these people get defensive, they're remembering a past life. And what I said to a nephew of mine who was in the same boat, I said, you know what? That was yesterday. Look at all the people around you that are willing to jump in, willing to go into the gates of hell for you.
Right.
And it's almost like they have to consciously turn and say, oh, yeah, that's right, and not go back to that old improper programming that I'm all alone in this.
Right. And I think it does help to get outside perspective, which is why your work is so valuable for people, because it does give them an opportunity to sort of, you know, accept and let go. I think that's what you really have to do. You've got to acknowledge it first. There's no harm in acknowledging it. As painful as it may be, acknowledge it and then let it go. But getting there is a hard part. And I think people perhaps don't take the time to delve into it. I think, you know, astrology is a lot of work for people, and you've got to be able to be willing to explore, well, what is there for you, and it does require some time and effort on your part, but it does help to have somebody to guide you through it, so.
And hopefully I purposely set up this workbook where it's very user-friendly, and I don't take anybody into the weeds. I give the first six basic keys of finding the improper programming, the crippling wound, and who you were supposed to be and where you were going in that last life. And then the second part is to do what I do with my clients, to kind of have a soul session where the soul is weighing in on what you found.
Absolutely. It's fascinating. We're going to take a quick break here. My guest today is Marguerite Manning, an old friend of mine, an old astrologer friend of mine who I met years ago, and we did our first podcast several years ago. Her website is MarguerriteManning.com. It's Marguerite Manning, MANNING.com. I encourage you to go check her out. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back. And I want to get some more information about those six keys. So let's cue that up for that when we return. Okay. I'll be right back. What is your destiny? Where are you going? What is your real purpose? Do you know? Do you want to know? Of course you do. It's your duty to yourself. We are all here for a reason, and we all have great potential. Discover all of this and more with a professional astrology reading. My name is Chris Fisher, and I can help you. Discover your strengths and work on your weaknesses and live your life to its fullest capacity. Based on your birthday, birthplace, and birth time, an authentic astrology reading will allow you to live your life to the fullest and reveal your true purpose. Only real astrology can give you real information. It is your destiny, and it is your path. Write me at chris@chrisflisher.com and book a reading today, or call me at 978-393-1036. That's 978-393-1036. www.chrisflisher.com. Astrology is the science of spirit, and it can serve as an invaluable aid in making the difficult choices in life and seeking truth in all the directions we choose. It holds the potential to allow each of us to evolve to our highest potential. It is the logic of the universe, the code of existence, and the pathway to true wisdom. It is our duty to draw from it the instructions for our lives and to live them to our fullest potential. As the great wheel turns, we are best prepared when we are best informed. Hi, your host, Chris Fisher here. I've been producer and host of this podcast and radio show for the past 10 years. My goal has always been to provide enlightening, progressive, and logical discussions about where we are as a species and how we move ourselves further down the road towards our greater potential. I believe astrology provides a great tool for observing our progress and awakening our consciousness to becoming a whole, better, and more complete individuals. I have sought to invite the best contemporary guests, thought leaders, and progressive minds to discuss topics that concern us all, regardless of your beliefs. Consider making a contribution through PayPal to help keep the great wheel turning so that I can continue for the next 10 years along the same enlightened path. As always, I thank you for your support. Okay, welcome back to Turning of the Wheel. My guest today is Marguerite Manning. Her website is Marguerite Manning, just like it sounds, and is spelled. And we are talking today about the 12th house and its role in our personal astrology. And you mentioned something about the six keys just before the break. And I'd love to delve into that a little more. Maybe you could just peel back the layers of that onion for us.
Sure. The six keys, and with each key in the workbook, you find this key in your own chart, and I have a chart tools guide that helps, beginner-friendly people not get lost in the planets and glyphs and signs, oh my. So they can find their stuff in the birth chart. But the first key is the sign on your 12th, as we spoke about. Right. And in the birth chart, the sign is identified by the astrological position of the glyph on the 12th house. That's the line in between the 11th and 12th. And in the workbook, this sign unlocks the underlying theme of your previous life, and much kind of like the significance of an Aesop fable, illuminates the moral of your soul's last earthly story. I tell people to think of it as a definitive thumbnail description of yesterday's plot line, with the pivotal loss, self-inflicted guilt, and improper programming included. So the sign gives you that. Key two is your 12th house ruler. The planet, luminary, or asteroid, because I use Chiron as the ruler of Virgo when it's on the 12th. That and if for karmic astrology only. It's listed by name in the chart tools guide. You can find it very easily. This ruler, when you find the ruler, it unlocks who you actually were in your last life, as well as the personal and pivotal thing about you that yesterday's guilt or shame that you identified in the first key caused you to secretly deny or sacrifice. So it's telling you what you're denying and sacrificing in this last time because it brought you a lot of trouble. Right. Key three, your 12th house ruler's sign. Now, this sign identifies, and you can find this in the workbook, it unlocks yesterday's secret personal sorrow by revealing the who you dreamed of becoming back then but never got around to being. who like, and if mine was in Gemini, the ruler of my child, I was dreaming of being a teacher or a communicator. In Aries, you were dreaming of being a soldier or a pioneer, and you never got around to fulfill that the way you saw it. Key four, your 12th house ruler's house. In the birth chart, again, this I show you how to identify this house, but in the workbook, it reveals just how your soul was most irrevocably wounded by the loss that was identified in key one. In the areas of, and the areas of life that are most affected in the crippling aftermath also in this lifetime. So this is the undoing. If you notice, the first was the secret, the second was the sorrows, and the house is the undoing. What was your undoing in your last lifetime? Wow. Now, key five, only two more to go. That was your the most difficult aspect, and I show everybody how to find the closest heart aspect to their 12th house ruler. The heart aspect with the lowest number of minutes and seconds, and how to find
the tightest or the tightest orb.
Correct. Right. In the workbook, this aspect identifies the single most contributing factor to yesterday's unhappiness. What was it that made you so the most unhappy, or seemed to always be thwarting you or undermining you in your last time? If it was Saturn, it was a father. If it was Moon, it could have been a woman or a mother, or your family. But I give you options in that lifetime as to what there was. The last one is the planets in your 12th. And while everybody doesn't have planets in their 12th, the people that do have planets in their 12th are usually a little bit more psychic, a little bit more creative, and a little bit more, I want to say, internally processing information, because they had hostages in their last life.
A little more depth there, like a person who's not a lightweight. This is a very deep person. Yeah,
And it comes from having something emotionally abused or oppressed that was taken from them or used against them, and whatever that planet is, if it's the sun, they were physically, emotionally abused and physically held hostage. If it's Mercury, they were verbally abused and then mentally held hostage. So whatever is in that 12th house, that's what your soul committed to reclaiming in this lifetime and bringing out into the sunlight.
Wow. Yeah, it's a fascinating discovery and interesting to work that way, because it does allow you to sort of, I think you think people will sort of have an aha moment when they start to see this, put this stuff together. They'll say, wow, this really is accurate.
I have never had a client, Chris, that didn't ever. In many cases, they cry and I say, you know what? It's okay, because that's how you know the soul is there. That's how you know the soul is getting it, because they're feeling overwhelmed, and on a conscious level, they don't understand why.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And so the emotions that come up are natural. There's your deep-seated emotions that are kind of bubbling up to the surface through this process.
And I just really feel, as you do, that science isn't astrology, and we might be looking at it, you know, and I always say no astrologer worth his Doppler is going to tell you, oh, you're coming into some bad energy, don't go out today, you're going to die. That's not what we do.
No.
We tell people the influences that are around them and help them use those energies and influences to the best, whether they're bad, how to get through them, if they're good, how to optimize on them. And that's what this is all about, is this is where you came from. Just by, like you said, acknowledging it, you can turn around and let go. I think what it's given for most people that I've worked with, including my children, it gives them a reason to let go of it. Oh, that, like, so many times we don't know if that's a memory or if it's a portent of things to come. But if we say, no, that was yesterday, you can say, oh, okay, I can look this way, because that's not going to happen to me. It already did.
Right. I think that what astrology does more than anything else is it gives you a roadmap of sorts, a way to, and I've always been an optimistic astrologer. I don't really look for the bad and never try to predict things are going to happen.
Right, Aries, you couldn't be anything but an optimist.
The themes are there. The themes are there. And they're so relevant, because you may not even realize that when you're younger, that where you end up eventually, and I think people end up at different places in time based on aspects in the way their chart unfolds. I think people can hit their prime very young, like Michael Jackson did, or say, for example, people can hit their prime when they're very old. I don't think that there's a natural rhythm to that. So that people do arrive where they're supposed to arrive eventually. We can't get impatient trying to get there eventually. If I looked back at myself when I was 12 or 13 and thought I was going to be hosting a radio show, I would have said, you're crazy. And yet,
absolutely,
by fate and by circumstance and by drive and interest and motivation, I ended up here. And this is exactly where I was supposed to be. If you look at my chart when I was 12 or 13, this is where I was supposed to be. So it makes sense. And in that regard, astrology can be incredibly empowering and a vital tool for sort of providing logic and sort of substance around who you are.
And did you use it, as I did, to not treat your children the same, but to raise them?
Well, I used it as, of course, you can get really into the weeds with this, especially when it comes to your own kids, but I tried to be very, objective about it, and I tried to see where their strengths and weaknesses were, and I found them, and they do seem to manifest, but they may not always arrive at the same time. This is what I think is important. Now, I would have the good fortune of having twins, And, you know, as an astrologer, having twins, I think it'd be a better laboratory because you're able to watch two people evolve at the same time. And my children have evolved in ways that I expect. Have they arrived at their pinnacle yet? I don't know, but they certainly are on their way there in some capacity. And I think that's what's valuable about it.
What I liked about it, using it as a tool for my children, when I would look at where their, forget their sun signs, but where were their Mercury's? I knew how they processed information.
Yeah.
Where was their moon? What did they need from me?
Mm-hmm.
That didn't mean that they, you know, that didn't mean that they didn't all get the discipline and had to follow the same rules, but how I communicated to each one and the method I used for helping them process the information was very helpful, just to know this was their cosmic DNA. Those signs told me how they learned in the last lifetime to process information or what they needed now. So now I could turn around and try to be the best parent I could, knowing what, not loosening the reins and making one child live up to a standard and not the other, but also just helping them see where it was that I was going.
You know? I think it's interesting. I love using Mercury myself as well, because, you know, I think more than anything else, and you being a Gemini and me having a strong Virgo presence in my life,
right,
we appreciate the power of Mercury. But I think more than anything else is that Mercury provides the vehicle for us to open up our souls and converse. And it's only through the conversation and the mutual interests and the mutual processing power that we are able to become, to be able to know somebody. If someone's quiet all the time, you don't really get to know them. You don't really know where they are. But when you open up and talk, and that's the Mercury in the person, that's when it all flows so nicely. And this is, again, this is what kills me about this, is that my twins have, their Mercury is at 12 degrees Aries, which is the exact same sign as my sun. So this shows a
and
natural...
And your Mercury is in Aries as well.
That's right. This shows a natural repartee, a natural sense of communication that eases the, and it's through the conversation and that hard conversations, which happens sometimes, that we become more involved with each other's lives. And I always say that, you know, and I say this especially when it comes to couples in particular, that if you want to find somebody, what you really want to find, you know, romance is great and we all love romance and passion and all that, but what you really want in the long run is someone who's going to be there and intellectually stimulate you for the rest of your life. And that would be found in the Mercury of the person. And when you find that and it works and it clicks, you've got to keep her, because friendship will override passion any day in the long haul, I think.
And it's going to turn around, you know, you again, and it's even more than the friendship, it's that mental stimulation.
Mental stimulation, yeah, curiosity factor that's always there, that sort of keeps you always alert. And I love Gemini people because they just fulfill that for me so clearly, and I love that being able to talk. It's through that interrelationship.
My best partners are always Aries, always.
Well, there you go.
You know, they just have this daring do. If I come up with a crazy idea, they're the first ones to implement it.
Oh, I know
that's
that.
What I love about them.
Head first. No regard for caution.
Yeah, but that's what makes it exciting and fun. And then, you know, and if there's a loss, so they're not daunted by that. You know what? We tried. We failed. Okay, let's do it again. You know, that kind of thing.
That's so true.
That, you know?
It's so true. Just charge ahead, and if you hit the wall, then you just bounce violently.
But they're also very bright and cutting edge, and they like the idea of going places where nobody's ever gone before. And there are very few people that are willing to do that. And mm-hmm. That's really very exciting for most Geminis or anybody that's in an intellectual frame of mind. And one other thing I want to say about your chart is that a lot of that comes. And I had written a book. You had me on the show, Juno, 2 years ago, have Juno in Aquarius, and in your last lifetime, you didn't have a partner that embraced your outside-the-box thinking, your unbelievable new
anxiety. Right. Yeah, yeah.
And if you can have one this lifetime, it's never going to go the distance. So that's why that's so important to you now.
But I love that. I think, you know, getting back to the idea of what friendship is all about and companionship and longevity with a relationship, you have to have that sort of stimulation.
Yeah.
The other way, you can't rely on passion alone. Passion will not do it. It's great for the first 5-6 years or whatever. But after that, you fall into a certain routine, and you need the recurring stimulation of someone who can keep your imagination active and keep you moving forward.
Right. That's so true. That's very true.
It's a fascinating discovery. You know, the whole idea of the houses in themselves, and, you know, the houses I mentioned in my opening comment, they are dictated by the presence of the rising sign. And, you know, we ask ourselves, you mentioned the question earlier, who taught these people this? I believe that a lot of this came into the being and into thought process, much the way some of the odd plant structures and stuff like that. And I mean, how do we know who found out what mushrooms to eat in the world? You know what I'm saying?
Well, Absolutely. But you know what I think? I'm going to take it one better for you. So you're going to have to back up a wagon for me after this. So I truly believe, now you look at Greek mythology. I loved Greek mythology in school. I truly believe at one point a higher life form walked this earth and taught us these things. You look at the Greek mythology when they talk about the gods and goddesses on Mount Olympus. We were like very remedial, and we deified these people that taught us these things and told, and then they left. Right. I think they left. They went someplace else, but they left a lot of information with us, and a lot of things that's how we learned it. When our ancient astrologers, to know that Saturn took 29 and a half years to get around the sun, they didn't even have a telescope at that time. And most of the things that they were operating on are still true today. So they had to have outside help in the science department. And you look at some of the mythological stories, like, you know, Portia would chase the sun god across the sky in his fiery chariot. Well, that sounds like a rocket ship to me, if anything does. If you look at the Greek mythological stories, so many of them, it reminds me of an old, and you might remember it, Chris, an old movie with Bing Crosby, a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court.
Oh, yeah.
He goes back in time and he lights the match and everybody thinks he's the god. I really think that's what happened. I think there was a higher life form walking here that was much more intuned scientifically. And look at the story of Pandora's box. When Pandora was working in the lab, let all these horrible things out, and they said to her, well, the one thing is hope. There's hope that we'll discover. So they might have been using this as a laboratory down here to set up, to, you know, examine diseases and cells. And this chick goes in there and she's working for him. She knocks the whole thing over. But they're saying to her, you know, don't worry, as a result, we'll have to get a cure for these things. So if you look at these mythological stories that were handed down to us, they seem on the surface so ridiculous. But if you look a little deeper, thinking of it as a layman, a rudimentary, very remedial person trying to tell a story about these gods and goddesses that they're in such awe mm-hmm. of, that were probably really just people that were a higher life form of some kind.
It really is in the story. You know, the thing is that what we see, when we see, you know, just like a fable, you mentioned the fable may be a ruse for the story
exactly.
of the hare and the rabbit, or whatever you want to talk, the hare and the tortoise, whatever fable you want to bring up. But symbolically, underneath them, there is a greater lesson. That's what we are talking about. And those greater lessons, I think, are there. I do believe that either a higher being or something, I don't think that all of our progress as our species has been directly directly a result of our intelligence. We had to start somewhere. I mean, where did the chicken come from? The chicken or the egg?
Exactly.
You know? These things had to start somewhere. And so as a result of that start place, it makes perfect sense that we came either with some predetermined notion or predetermined intelligence, or something had to be brought to us beforehand. And I think that astrology perhaps falls into that. And when the longer we go on in time, and the more we see, the more data that's more empirical data that we can gather about time
right.
and place and motion, the more accurate it becomes. And we are at that place right now, I think, where it's becoming incredibly, we're seeing the accuracy. We can see it no matter what chart you look at. You look at the chart of the United States. You look at the chart of anybody. You
Absolutely.
Can see this stuff happening. So how do you explain that? You explain it by saying this is the natural order and this is where we are.
Right. And that's absolutely true. It's in divine order with the universe, this universe. And that's how the ancients studied us. They never would have separated astrology and astronomy as one science. To them, they were one science. They would study the universe, how it moved as a whole, and then the individual planets, how those movements affected us physically, like any OG astrology, sociology, how they affected the human being down here on Earth. They were one science, and it wasn't until, and I was raised a Catholic, but it wasn't until the Catholic Church started saying, whoa, people are going to start running to their astrologers and not come here, that they started turning the astrology part of astronomy into an occult, into something that should be voodoo, should not be really considered a real science. And that's where it got the blemish.
That's right.
And I think it's only coming back now that it is, in fact, a science.
Yeah.
And I say to people, you know, we don't, just because we can't, these are properties we can't see, touch, and feel, like rain, wind, and snow, doesn't mean that they don't exist,
of course,
these
not.
Influences, you know?
Of course not. And I heard somewhere years ago, I've never been able to validate this, that the largest collection of astrology material and books is held in a secret room in the Vatican. So
I would believe that.
Yeah.
I would believe that. Look at Galileo, how he was shunned
right.
just for saying that we orbited around the sun.
Right, because what astrology does, it gives personal empowerment to an individual and it robs the church of their ability to be influential. And this is not to be, you know, blasphemous or anything.
Right.
It's just a simple fact of life. And I was raised in an area, my father was a minister and he was totally against astrology and he just thought it was, you know, bunk. And I never really had the conversation with him later because we just separated and went different ways, but it's there. And you know, your comment.
Tell me, Chris, do you believe it goes against any of the basic teachings of spiritual religion? I don't see it at odds. I don't see it at odds.
I think it's completely in concert. And I don't think it has to be either or. I think it's something you use it as an adjunct. You use it as an adjunct tool.
Exactly.
Like you're digging a ditch, you need a hoe, and you perhaps need a shovel. You need two things to dig the hoe, to dig the trench. And it's the same thing with astrology. And I never understood why people think that if you believe in astrology, the Presbyterians, for example, they believe in predetermination. They believe in that your life is predetermined. Now, Mark Edmund Jones, who was behind the Sabian symbols in the Sabian Assembly, was a Presbyterian minister, but yet he believed in predestiny. So predestiny is kind of what astrology is, because you look at the chart and you say, here's your strengths, here's your weaknesses. This is a form of predestiny in a way. So
it's not mutually exclusive. In other words, like we said, you can have a destiny and still choose not to live up to it.
Of course. You know? And that may
and
be
that's
your
the free will option.
That's where things get dicey. You're right.
Exactly. When we get involved as humans, and the analogy that I always use, I say, it'd be like if you're at a stove and your three kids come into when you're cooking at the stove and your three boys come into the kitchen when they're little and you turn it off and say, no, nobody touch the stove because you're going to get burned if you do. There you are, the higher power telling them what's going to happen. That's just a rule.
Yeah.
You walk out, two of them listen to the other one, touches it, gets burned, and you walk back and says, you're punishing me.
Yeah.
And it's not about that. It's about that there are certain laws of divine nature that when we use our free will and go against them, that's when chaos comes in, and that's when we reap the chaos.
Right.
It has nothing to do with punishment.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. Especially the concept of, and the idea I'm wondering about is, if people are born, as you and I believe, they're born with a sort of a charted destiny of sorts. Why don't people, do you think people always live up to that? Or do you think that they are on a sort of a wheel of repetitive mistake making?
I think, and there was a book written a long time ago. I think I might have mentioned it to you, Raymond Moody, Life After Life. And he was talking about he had interviewed people of all different creeds, all different walks of life, all different religions, every part of the globe that had near-death experiences. And they all talked to him about the same thing, this beautiful, wonderful, warm being of light that communicated with them on a different level. They all saw their life. They went over their life with them, hence our life flashes before us. But this being wasn't judgmental. It was like, all right, you didn't do so well there, but maybe next time. Or you did a really good job here. That was wonderful. It was supportive, encouraging. They didn't want to come back. But the being said to them, or the universal mind said, okay, you are going back. Or my belief is then when we die and we're going into the next life, the being says to us, the universal mind says, okay, what do you want next time? I say, okay, give me relationships 101. So the universe in its infinite wisdom puts all the information and the math into this big, giant, universal computer. And when every single planet is in line for the right influence for me to live up to the lesson so that I can get that relationships 101, boom,
yeah.
My soul is dispatched to this planet. That's why, of course, the birth energies we were born under reflect our destiny. Now, are we going to stand there and once we get down here and do the heavy lifting of living up to them? That's what we chose. So, okay, we don't. But again, the universe in its infinite wisdom is never angry if we don't. Just says, okay, you have to do it over. And that's why I believe, Chris, that some souls are more evolved than others.
Well, because they came back at a higher bit.
They decided to do the heavy lifting in their last
right.
lifetime. And they might be three lifetimes ahead. It's like, in other words, it's not a race. It's just till we get it right.
Mm-hmm. And I think that the idea of being enlightened, enlightenment comes to people through various ways. I mean, some people may have tragic experiences which open them up. Some people may just stumble upon it. Some people may be more curious than others. I think that there's a certain charm that's in there that helps people discover this. And I think that the discovery process, which I think astrology is key in finding, allows you to step into that and actually live that role, being much more informed, as opposed to sort of just ignoring it. You may just chalk it up as, well, that's just life and go on your way. Poor, poor, pitiful me. But if you step into it and acknowledge that it's going to happen and embrace it, it's almost a way of saying you're going to graduate sooner, or you've already graduated
right.
in some way.
Right. Mm. Absolutely. I agree 100% with that. And that's very, very interesting. And I think we're just finding out more about, people say to me, why don't we remember our last life? And I really, when Edgar Cayce addressed that, he said, you don't want to get paralyzed by your last life either.
Because it's backwards looking.
But it is there in the memory bank to remind your soul. It's almost like having a program card back there, so that it's like your blood. You have a potential in your blood and your DNA, and it's the same thing. This is what it's going to draw these influences to you, this program board, so that you can live up to those energies. And I have found out that many times in this lifetime, we spin our wheels feeling, why me, poor me, I guess I'm fated for this, when if we turned around and said, I'm actually born to these parents because I had them in the last lifetime, and this time I said I was going to do something different. I think that's empowering.
Yeah.
You know?
And, you know, and the idea of being a composite of your parents, because we all are, you know, we're sort of a hybrid where you got a little bit of our mother, a little bit of our father in us. I think having coming into that, we bring with them, we bring with us their influence and their power and their lives as well. And so I think that being born into the parents we're born, I believe we actually choose the parents we're born into, sets the stage for our evolvement and our evolution as the foundation. So coming into a world with a certain set of characteristics from our parents enables us to fulfill that journey. So we sort of do come in. We sort of do come in. The question is being aware of it. I think that's where things fall down. And people now are becoming more in tune with this as there's a rise in spirituality and a sense of self-reflection, which is allowing people to find that better. I think that's an important piece. I think that it's the discovery of this that may be pointing to the evolution of the species as a whole, because the more we are informed about our past and where we came from and this kind of knowledge, this information that you're giving us, allows us to step into the next stage easier. I think that's part of, you know, having our antennas attuned right.
And you know, another thing I have discovered in karmic astrology, which might be very, you might already be aware of, but it was very enlightening to me, was because, and the universe doesn't work in time the way that we do, and it doesn't work forward in the way we do. So we have to have a different way of looking at things and being a little bit more flexible in our thought and our thinking. And what I realized is that we came into this world, we have parents, and our biggest problem, if we have them with our parents, is we deify them. Mm-hmm. And then we find out one day the idol had clay feet. How dare they be human? And what I found out is that many times that we're here to teach our parents, not the other way around, on a spiritual level. So we are actually, the soul coming to the parents are actually a little, like your children are a little bit more evolved than you in some particular area that you've chosen to learn from them.
Please don't tell them that.
No, I wouldn't dare. And don't you tell mine either. But the thing is, that's why, how could our parents not fall short?
Well, of course. I think that the child is the father of the man, as they say, and the children do provide. They do teach us things that we wouldn't ordinarily
about ourselves, not about them, about us.
About us, exactly. And it's only through that process of procreation that we actually really step into that. People who don't have children perhaps have to come to that a much different route in some way.
Right. Absolutely.
They probably get there some other way. But I do believe that children bring it. You know, interestingly enough, my three sons are all earth signs. I got two Tauruses, the twins, and a Capricorn. And for me, who has very little earth in his chart, except for my rising sign, I find that to be incredibly grounding. They have grounded me in ways I could never have been otherwise and given me that sense of responsibility to, you know, provide for them, be there for them. And it's made me a much better human being, I think, as a result. Maybe they may not agree with me on that part, but at least they do now that they're older.
I agree. I think that, you know, that's very, very typical of what the lessons we find in our children. My three children, I have a double cardinal, a double fixed, and a double air.
Wow.
And I'm like, yeah. So I was like, so I'm not just getting a little, I'm getting it. Both guns with each one, and that's an eye opener, you know. And with my son, he's with his Aquarian sun and his Taurus moon. You talk about him immovable.
Yeah.
You know,
oh gosh.
Unless it's something where it's for a friend or he wants to do something very, you know, humanitarian for somebody, or it's very different. It's just really eye opening as a parent to think that. I always say to my girls once they started having, when she had her daughter, children show you who you are versus who you think you are.
Right.
And that's a big difference.
And I love that. I think that's a wonderful thing.
Right.
And you know, there's nothing wrong with being fixed, because being fixed, I in some ways, part of me loves the fixity of what a fixed sign does, because they sort of know where they're going. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. They have their eyeball on the ball, and they're just going to follow through. And I love that.
It's admirable to me. They're the ones you want to leave in charge of the store for sure.
No kidding. Exactly. Because
you know
they're going to get it.
Their idea.
They're going to get the job done, and they're going to do it right. And they're going to stick with their opinions, which I think is admirable as well. And I, you know, the Aquarians, I just had a grandchild who's an Aquarius, and he's going to, you know, I see him as being, you know, I see a lot of Aquarius babies being born now, and it makes me wonder, is this a wave of the future? Because the Aquarians, these are the ones who will think outside of the box and be very big and collective, and they'll embrace the world. They won't be so self-centered, and, you know, they'll have the sense.
My son, had never, he's the only child I have that never tattled on his sisters. Never met a person he didn't like. Hmm. And no matter how much in trouble he was when he was little, he could be in trouble and come out when he's a little boy with the tears still in his eyes to tell me a joke. The girls were not like that. They, you know, held their grudges for a while when I was angry with them. But this is what I mean about an Aquarian. It's over. It's over and done. You know, they're very They're very easy to get along with.
They are, and they have. I love the fact that they're more outward focused as opposed to being inward focused. This is why, and I think that it's interesting that in this age of Facebook and stuff like that, where people are so inwardly focused on themselves, that this is a shift. And Facebook may be the straw that breaks the camel's back and forces us all to run back and say, listen, let's stop looking at ourselves so much, because it's such an abomination. It's such a proliferation of this, of the same thing over and over again. Me, 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 me. I think that Facebook, in its own way, is slapping it right in our face, saying, stop looking in the mirror so much and look outside. And I think that as a result of that forcing function, it may allow us to be more collective in our approach to the world.
And it's very true. I also claim that, you know, when my kids were little, I forced them to write thank you notes and things like this, because really socializing is a tool of the past for the youngest generation. And I really think that what Facebook is forcing us to do is say, you know, you want to substitute a real social community for a cyber one.
Mm-hmm.
And that isn't always what it seems to be sometimes. It's not always real. Sometimes it's founded on really wet ground, or it's a house of cards. It's not what you're not dealing with who you think you're dealing with. So there's nothing like getting out in your community and really meeting people.
Face to face is where it's at. And
exactly.
I think that they will find. I've got several of my sons, my sons and their friends have gotten off Facebook. And these are all millennial kids who were raised in this era. They're just like, I don't want to be anything to do with that. They just run away from it, which I find to be very encouraging. I'm not saying I'm not a Facebook hater. People hear me talk about Facebook a lot. I just find it to be such an unusual phenomenon that is so indicative of our times and of our leader, of this sort of this narcissistic sense of who I am, who people are. And we all use it for marketing. We have to. We've got to get out there. We're sort of in this world. We're forced to use it. But I think as a tool overall, it is less helpful than it is useful, than it is helpful. I think because it removes us from that sense of face-to-face contact, laughter, sharing meals, doing things together as real human beings. That's what we're meant to do.
It's like the telephone. The telephone is a wonderful tool. But if you start getting emotionally involved with every message you're sending, it stops becoming a tool. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the problem with Facebook. It was a wonderful tool for connecting when and networking, when you wanted to do things, you had projects. But to use it to serve as, to suffice as friendships and a community of people that you can rely on and your best friends, I don't think that's possible.
It's a false reality. It's just not real. It's just not real. Well, anyway, we have run out of time, as I thought we would. I knew we would. We could talk for another hour, no problem. But and we'll do it again.
Okay,
I learned a lot today. I love your insights about the 12th house. I think it's fascinating. My guest today has been Marguerite Manning. Her website is marguerite.manning.com. She has a wonderful bunch of information up there, and she has this whole new idea of this workbook, the Karmic Workbook, this brand new and very worthwhile your pursuit and looking into. There's a great deal of knowledge there. And the thing is, I think that in order for all of us to really understand what your work or you're doing with this Karmic 12th house is to be willing to step into that world and understand it. We can't just keep burying our heads and running away, because sooner or later you have to sort of step in and figure out who you are. And that's part of maturing. It may come at different points in your life, but it will happen. And what better way to understand it than with a good guide? So with that in mind, Marguerite, it's always a great pleasure to speak with
you. Great pleasure.
I always have
Chris,
a great time.
Chris, thanks so much. Fun. It always goes by too fast.
It does. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's that Gemini in us. You know,
the Gemini Aries. We never shut up.
Never shut up. Please turn those people off. Anyway, thanks, Marguerite. It's been great talking to you today.
You too.
You've been listening to Turning of the Wheel with your host, Chris Fisher. To schedule a reading with me or to order artwork, you may visit my website at www.turningofthewheel.com. That's www.turningofthewheel.com. Or you can call me at 978-393-1036. Thank you. And as always, be open to possibilities.